life, but yet life flourishes there. Now, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of theories that are dealing with Antarctica and dealing with an ancient technology, an ancient knowledge that's there. In this video here, I'm going to try to show you all the points that pretty much everyone talks about, from the theories to what I believe. I believe that we are looking at events that's taking place in Antarctica that, in all honesty, is still amazing today. Well, let's take a look at those. Let's start off with some of them, some of the theories that's out there. Now, here's a map of Antarctica, the west and the east. This is the map as we know it today of what science and map makers say that the Antarctic looks like. Now, there are other ancient maps that have been found that kind of shows Antarctica in a different way of life. Now, here's a very interesting map. Now, this is the Parry Reis map of Antarctica. Now, this map is for map charting, and it's showing that there was no ice covering the Antarctic at one time in history. Now, in 1929, a group of historians found an amazing map drawn on a gazelle skin. The researchers showed that it was a genuine document drawn in 1513 by Parry Reis, a famous admiral of the Turkish fleet in the 16th century. Now, he had a passion for maps and have a thing pretty much drawn out, made out, and worked with. And he was a high rank within the Turkish Navy, allowing him to have the privilege of access of the Imperial Library. And this Turkish admiral admits in this that he notes on the map that he completed and copied the data from a large number of source maps, some which dated back to the 4th century BC and earlier. Now, a lot of a lot of theories are out there about this map and how it came to be and what ties it had. And with this, if he was able to go off of ancient civilizations that show this map, that means at some point in history that we as humans were able to go to the Arctic. And the Arctic is known as being the coldest place in the world, known as the coldest desert, and that no life is supposed to be there. And yet, this map indicates that there was life, there were civilizations, and that there was a known way of going into this bottom part, into the top part of Antarctica, which is very interesting indeed. So this is a theory that's been out there. It's not even a theory anymore. It's been proven a fact. But this proves that there is something in our ancient times that's not being told by conventional history. We are told that our ancestors were a dumb, barbaric, excuse me, caveman mentality where all they knew was hunting and gathering. They didn't know how to build mega structures, but yet evidence proves in history that ancient structures exist. One theory that's out there right now is an ancient structure that has ties to other ancient structures around the world. Let's take a look at that theory. Pyramids in the Antarctic. Now, we are now being able to see that in many places around the world and in the oceans, we're finding these gigantic mega structures. When I was doing research early on, looking into the Antarctic, I actually looked from the mindset of what the ancient aliens theory was. Is that there was a civilization in the past that was so advanced that we view them as gods. Now, I don't want to lose anybody here. I don't believe that aliens are going to come from a distant star and come to the Earth, because I'll be getting into that other theory there that has a tie to the Antarctic. But if there are, which it is being said even by scientists today, that there are pyramids in Antarctica, well, that would mean that there had to be a civilization that existed in Antarctica before those areas froze. Now, there's proof that shows that there are water erosion that's in the Sphinx in Egypt. And that if that were to happen or take place, it had to be before or at the very end of the last ice age. Something transpired in our world where we see woolly mammoths and other creatures that has food still in their mouth and in their belly, which means that a great freezing took place, and it was so quick, so vast, it froze creatures exactly where they were standing. So, is there a civilization in Antarctica? Some people will say yes. Some people will say there is proof. And a gentleman that spoke about this. This is Admiral Byrd. You can look up on YouTube anywhere. Just type his name in and listen. This is an image that you'll see where he actually has a conversation in an interview where he is talking about going to Antarctica. Now, he goes into great details in Antarctica. He talks about the resources that are there, the capability of further achievements for mankind, and he goes on to say that there is something, a landmass past the great ice shelf. Now, when you're looking at this, and you're looking at this man, and he's an admiral, and he's talking, there's things out there that's known as the Admiral Byrd's diary. But before we go any further, I'm going to bring up and let us read exactly who this man was and how he had the ability to do the things that he was able to do. The Missing Diary of Admiral Byrd. Our Richard E. Byrd was a Freemason, and he made at least three polar trips. So we now see that this admiral is a Freemason, which deals with the secret society, secret knowledge, secret text. And the thing is that it's amazing how connected the Freemasons are with our ancient past and how they are looking and always furthering their knowledge of ancient technology and ancient structures. Now, as you can read here for yourself, these are the different voyages. And the reason why I have this up is I'm not going to read all of it, but I want to have this up so that you can stop this video yourself. Read this at your own time because I have a lot of stuff that I want to cover. But take a look at each little bit of information that he presents here. One thing about Admiral Byrd is that he is also what is composed of the hollow earth theory, believing that there is this massive hole in the Arctic, that Antarctica, that you can go into, and great civilizations are supposed to be there. One of the legends for Admiral Byrd is the fact that he, after World War II, it was believed that the Nazis went to Antarctica. Now it is believed that the Germans, the Nazis, went to Antarctica. It is believed that when they went there, they met an ancient civilization. Now there are more than a few conspiracy theories, truly, that's out there that deals with this subject and about an alien civilization. And also the number of paranormal activities and strange phenomena that takes place in Antarctica. But one of the most intriguing stories that I've ever had the privilege of covering and looking into is the story of dealing with the Nazis when they went to Antarctica. It has now been proven, it was on the History Channel, that the skull that was believed to be Hitler was actually a female skull. The head wound that was believed that he committed suicide is now looking to be fictitious. The thing that people don't realize is that something took place in World War II that had never happened before, and that the supernatural element was something that the SS used a lot of and at their disposal. And they were looking around the world for the ancient Ubermen, the Superman, and looking for the ultimate super soldier. It is believed that the scientists from Nazis, Germany, made a deal with an ancient civilization. There were something known as the Foo Fighters that would encircle, attack, and almost destroy aircraft that was coming and fighting in World War II, and no one could understand what the Foo Fighters were. It is evident that shows that the Nazis were so far advanced scientifically in air and space and missiles and aircraft that in Operation Paperclip, the United States went in and took those Nazi scientists out of Germany so that they could come and do research and science for us, which is what created NASA. So we see that the operation that we've seen with NASA, and there's a lot of videos out there that you can just look at for yourself and see that there's certain topics and certain things that NASA says they have done that has really been brought into question. But I want to focus on dealing with the Nazis and Admiral Byrd. Now, it is believed that the Nazis and their U-boats left Germany and fled to Antarctica. And it is believed that there was a civilization that they had made a pact with, and it is believed that they actually found these ancient Ubermen that they were searching for, which we'll go into a biblical side of this in just a second. But it was believed that Admiral Byrd's first goals were to go to Antarctica to hunt down the Nazis. As you see in this picture here, the Nazis have raised their flag in Antarctica. This is an old practice that's done by many civilizations. Wherever the European countries, set their flag up, whether some indigenous, some people that live there or not, if they didn't have their flags up there, that was theirs. It's kind of like you place your flag where you want to house your next part of your global empire. Now, Admiral Byrd says that he went down there. It is reported that he went down there. They went to go after the Nazis, and they were literally fled back up into the United States with their tails between their legs, because it's believed that when they got down there, they went up against a advanced civilization, a very strong and powerful civilization that literally destroyed, killed many military, and in doing so, it made America fear of what was coming. Now, the two theories that I'm talking about is that I believe that the Nazis, which never signed a treaty of surrender like Japan did with the United States. Now, they said that they killed Hitler, which he committed suicide, which is now showing that he didn't. But here's a theory that I want to throw out there to you right here, and something that I'd like for you yourself to research on this while I'm doing so many other things dealing with this topic. But the Nazis had two ways of conquering a nation. One, by brute force, going in there, showing their military might, and another was going in there and consuming that culture, which means they integrated into those cultures. And by integration in those cultures, they were able to take over those cultures. In Poland alone, there are many statues that are up there that the Nazis established that dealt with these different deities and ancient gods that they still have up there because to them it looks good. But it shows this integration of the supernatural, the integration of this power that the Nazis had in consuming a culture. And it is believed that in Operation Paperclip, we thought we were bringing the Nazis over here to help us further our agenda in science and into rockets. But in all honesty, it is believed that they were able to integrate themselves into our civilization. And the way America is today is what the Fourth Reich was supposed to be. Think about that for a second. Look at the way America is set up, and you look at the similarities with America today and the birth of Nazi Germany, and you realize the parallels are astonishing in the least. So it was believed for the Nazis to take over a culture by brute force or integration. And if that's the case, is there an agenda of hiding truth from the American people and around the world? And I believe there is, and it deals with Antarctica. Now, to deal with the theory and the topics about Antarctica, I have to go into the Flat Earth theory. Now, I know a lot of people are going to be standoff, look at this part of the video and go, oh gosh, another Flat Earth theory. But here's the thing. If there is an ancient civilization that lives in Antarctica, if there is a ties to the Nazis with this, is there an agenda to deceive the whole world? The thing is, guys, to be as a Christian, we are told that we do not just deal with flesh and blood, but principalities and of evil spirits. And there are evidence in scripture that backs the notion of a flat earth. This right here is a creation of this of a map square of a stationed earth. And this is how it was believed and how it says it's depicted in the scriptures. I'm going to show you just a couple of those scriptures that are talked about. Trust me, I understand the controversy dealing with the flat earth theory, but if you look at the scriptures and you see how Yahweh depicts his creation, and I have some of them here for you. And his hands were steady until the good going down of the sun. That's Exodus 17:12. Then it goes on and says, and the sun stood still and the moon stayed. Joshua chapter 10 verses 12 and 13. It goes on to Corinthians. It says, the world also shall be stable that it cannot be moved. Chronicles 16:30. Then, if you go, it says, to him that stretches out the earth and make great lights, not worlds, but great lights, comes out of Psalms 136, 6 through 7. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth. Isaiah 12, 10. The four corners of the earth. Isaiah 11, 12. The whole earth is at rest. Isaiah 14, 7. The prophecies concerning the global earth. Dealing in Isaiah 29th chapter. Woe to the rebellious children, says the Lord, that takes counsel, but not of me. Isaiah 31. So the sun returned 10 and has laid the foundations of the earth. Isaiah 58:13. Thus says the Lord, which giveth the sun for light by day, the moon and the stars for light by night. This deals with not dealing with worlds. This is in Jeremiah 31, 35 through 36. And then in Acts, it says that he will turn the sun and the moon. He will turn, he was, the sun will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood. Acts 2, 20. Now, I'm not doing this video to make a flat earth debate with anyone. I'm showing how the Antarctic is being viewed through every aspect that we're seeing in conspiracy theories and in the scientific community. If you choose, and I'm just throwing this in here, if you choose to look at the flat earth theory, I do have videos that deal with that. But I challenge you And this is the only thing I'm going to do. Just challenge you the same way I was challenged dealing with the flat earth theory. Find an image of the earth that's not been photoshopped that matches up with the way the scientific community says the earth is supposed to look. Now, I want to say this part right here, and this is out of the first chapter of Genesis. This lets us know that there is something that is going on in the world that we look at the scriptures that does not match up to the scientific community. See, the whole thing about science, a lot of people don't realize, is that science in its own way has become its own religion. And people will fight for it more so than you see in today. People fighting for religion, believing in God, Yahweh. But the thing is that we have so blindly accepted what scientists and science tells us that we don't even realize in doing so, if we claim to be a Christian, a lot of times that science makes us reject what the scriptures tells us. And we are not to be transformed by the world, but we are to transform the world. Now, God Yahweh in Genesis chapter 1 comes out and says, "And God Elohim said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day." So God Yahweh created the firmament, and that's how this map here is depicted, from the waters above, from the waters below. Now, a lot of people are going, "Oh, if the earth is flat, then why won't we fall off the edge of the earth?" Well, if there is a firmament that's protecting us from being able to go outside into the above waters, and does that mean we've never been to outer space, and that the stars in the heaven, if we're spinning like they say, how are the stars in their position to stay that way and us be able to look up and see it? It's something I just want you to look into the scriptures and what the and the ancient text. We are finding out that the earth is not the way we've been told. There is a great and ancient knowledge that has been around, and I believe that it's now coming forth. There's a book that has a lot of controversy. It's the Book of Enoch. A lot of people want to displace this book. They don't want to have anything to do with the Book of Enoch. But the Book of Enoch, in its chapters, talks about Antarctica. I know, it's crazy, right? But it does. And I'm going to show you the passage in the Book of Enoch. Now, a lot of people don't want to look at the Book of Enoch because they say it's not in the 66 books of the Bible. But to be honest, the King James Bible doesn't have the Apocrypha, but the 1611 edition did. And the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Book of Enoch was one among many. Matter of fact, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Book of Enoch, the giants, the Book of the Giants were all there and found. Matter of fact, all the books of the Old Testament were found except for one, and that is Esther. And yet we look at Esther and accept Esther as being a biblical endorsed text that is in our scriptures. But yet in the Dead Sea Scrolls, that is the one book that has not been found. But yet the Book of Enoch has. The early church fathers, in the Book of Jude, in the Book of Peter, Peter knew about the Book of Enoch, and they actually spoke about it and the topics that were in it. Now we're going to take a look at that Book of Enoch that deals with Antarctica. So let's move on. Now this book, Book of Enoch, has brought up a lot of controversy in the Christian community. Some people sit there and say it shouldn't be paid attention to at all. Other people sit there and say it's a nice to have this extra biblical text. I just want to make sure I clarify that I believe the Bible is the inherent word of Yahweh. The Book of Enoch does open up with a very interesting beginning. It says that this was not for this generation, but for a later generation when these events would again take place. Jesus Christ refers to the last days as in the days of Noah. And when you look at the days of Noah, which I'm going to read, you realize that, yes, their sin was running amok in the world, but sin happened in the Garden of Eden, and it wasn't there that Yahweh decided to destroy sin. There was something that took place that corrupted his creation. Now, a lot of people don't realize this, but in Genesis, Enoch is actually mentioned. And it's a very interesting passage about Enoch that comes out of the fifth book of Genesis, chapter 18. It says, "And Jared lived 162 years, and he begot Enoch." Now, we've heard of as in the days of Jared. What took place in the days of Jared? But let's take a look. It says, "And Jared lived and begot Enoch 800 years and begot sons and daughters." Now, it's very interesting. Jared's mentioned and Enoch is mentioned. And it goes on and it says, "And all the days of Jared were 962 years and he died. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. Enoch walked with God Elohim after he begot Methuselah 300 and begot sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch," which I find this very interesting and something that will make your head go, really? But this is what it says about him. It says, "Enoch walked with God after he begot Methuselah for 300 years. He begot sons and daughters. All the days complete that Enoch was here on the earth, all the days were 365 years." I find that interesting because 365, isn't that how many days we have in a year? "And Enoch walked with God Elohim, and he was not, for God Elohim took him." So we see right here that there's something special about Enoch. So much that he walked with the Creator, walked with Yahweh. And as he walked with him, when it became 365 days of his life, 365 years of his life, just like that, he was taken up into heaven to be with the Creator. So Enoch has never died. A lot of people don't realize that. They don't realize that that scripture is in the fifth book of Genesis. Because we always focus on the sixth chapter. That the sons of God, the sons of Elohim, came down and had relations with the daughters of men. That they gave birth to giants, the Nephilim, the mighty men of old, the men of renown. The things of myth and legends, Hercules, Aries, all those have ties when you look at how things are happening. That before the flood is when it was believed that the gods walked among man. In the book of Enoch, it talks about these watchers, 200 of them, came down and interacted and even copulated with the daughters of men. And in doing so, they created offspring. Now, in chapter 18 and verse 19, this is where, for me, it all comes together dealing with Antarctica. If the book of Enoch is to be taken as factual, be taken as something that was not meant for those earlier generations, but for the last generation, this generation, the generation which Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, I believe Antarctica has a big part of this. And that it could show that there is a race of fallen angels that live there and are waiting for the time to strike. It goes on in the 18th chapter of the book of Enoch, and I'm not going to read all of it, but it says, I then survived the prodigals of all wind, perceiving that they contribute to adorn the whole creation and to preserve the foundations of the earth. I survived the stone which supports the corners of the earth. I also beheld the four winds which bear up the earth and the firmament of the heaven. So he is describing being at the edge of the world, being right there, seeing the firmament and seeing the edges of our planet that we're living on. And he talks about this wind in the sky and arise in the midst of heaven and the earth, and the constructing the pillars of heaven. He also saw the winds which turned the sky and caused the orb of the sun and all the stars to set over the earth. I saw the winds which support the clouds. So he's saying where he is, he's able to see the orb of the sun. And he's able to see the stars and how they set, that there is, in my eyes, looking at it, is as if it is depicting a great machine that is moving, and he's able to observe this. But let me go down to some of the scriptures that I think actually ties into Antarctica. Now, in these parts here, he talks about the path of the angels. He talks about all these glorious stones and parts of God's throne. But one thing that stands out to me is in verse 11, it says, and there I saw a place on the side of an extended territory where waters were collected. Now, he's describing an extended territory in this area, and that this is where all waters are connected, which, again, deals with something that we're not told about in science. And this goes on to what I think deals with where the watcher angels, where the fallen angels that rebelled so much that they were actually bound and put there waiting for judgment. And likewise beheld terrestrial fountains deep in the fiery columns of heaven. And then he goes on, he talks which was the columns of heaven. I beheld fire, which descended without number, but neither on high nor in the deep. Over the foundations also I perceived a place which had neither the firmament of heaven above it, nor the solid ground beneath it, neither was the waters above it, nor anything on the wing, but the spot was desolate. And he is describing this place that is desolate, that he's talking about a vast territory past this area. And as he keeps on going, there's a part where you see the firmament and it's no longer there, in this vast void. Now, for me, I believe this is where the watcher angels are held in the abyss. With this, it's interesting because it's not only this being mentioned in the book of Enoch, but I'm going to show you somewhere else in just a second of another ancient text that refers to the same area. But Enoch goes on down and he talks about, then the angel said, this place until the consummation of heaven and earth will be the prison of the stars and the host of heaven. So it is saying, and stars is also depicted for angels or for angelic beings. And so it's saying right here that they are held in this place. And the stars which roll over fire, also those that transgress are the commandment of God before the time arrived, for they came not in their proper season. Therefore was he offended with them and bound them until the period of the consummation of their crimes in the secret year. So right here we're seeing that this place, wherever it is past this firmament that is described almost like where Antarctica is, this desolate place, this frozen barren place, and this is where they're held. So could it be possible that some of the Watcher angels were in the Antarctic, still there? Could that be what everyone's looking at from the ancient alien community, saying that this is, you know, these are aliens and that they have these secret bases built there? Could this be what people are talking about, an ancient civilization that has been known to be with these pyramids that's being found in Antarctica? Possibly. I'm going to have the whole Book of Enoch here for you to, if you choose so, to download as a PDF and read it for yourself. It's chock full of many different information, which is very interesting in itself. The next chapter, chapter 19, let me go ahead and pull that up right now, goes into this part dealing with the angels. As Ural said, here the angels who copulated with women appointed their leaders, and being numerous in appearance made man profane and caused them to err, so that they sacrificed to devils as to gods. For in that great day there shall be a judgment, with which they shall be judged until they are consumed, and their wives also shall be judged, who laid astray with angels of heaven, that they might salute them. And I, Enoch, I alone saw the likeness of the end of all things, nor did any human being see it as I saw it. So he's saying that he saw the end, the edge, that no man has laid eyes on, not the way he did. And I find that interesting, because does this mean that there is this connection dealing with what's talked about in the scriptures, this great war that's been taking place between the Creator Yahweh and his other creation, which are known as the Watchers and the Angels? Could this be what's taking place with Lucifer? And why our society explains away all scientific knowledge that deals with things that they say, well, this is how it is on these planets, but yet they have no way of truly knowing that, because they've not physically been there. Are we seeing that, you know, people that deal with the flat earth theory may be onto something, saying, you know, what we're being told by the scientists that people so blindly believe, are we seeing that that we're being lied to? Is there a reason why the Book of Enoch's been found out? Something my wife has said to me earlier, she said, you know, with the Book of Enoch being found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, along with all the other Old Testament books except for Esther, is this showing that all knowledge has been brought forth? That the thing that Daniel talks about, Daniel lock up these teachings, these sayings for a later generation. This isn't for you to understand, but for a later generation, when all knowledge will be brought forth. I believe we possibly are looking at the fact that this all connects, and that if people kind of would get past their bias and say they don't want to deal with the UFOs, but yet the Bible has depictions of things that could be depicted as UFOs, that doesn't mean I'm saying these guys are coming from another universe or another star, that there are alien brothers and sisters. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's the same deceitful lie that the evil one has been doing all along. And the reason why we don't have this education taught to us in schools today is because they don't want the masses to be awoken or wake up to the truth that there is a creator. That would go against all the Darwin theories. That would go against everything in our paradigm. If all of a sudden it was proven that these ancient texts proved that there's more to this world than we know, and it would point to a creator. Think about that. Then you could not deny that there was a God. I'm going to show you one last thing to be the end of this. I'll let you see the other ancient texts have talked about the flat earth, and I believe they've also, it talks about what Antarctica is too. I'm going to have a link to the Book of Gilgamesh, but here's the thing. The Book of Gilgamesh talks about him going to the edge. His friend Enkidu ends up dying, and it bothers him. Now, Gilgamesh is known as being, you know, two-thirds man, one-third god. I also find that interesting that it talks about being two-thirds man and one-third god. Just to throw this out there, we are now living in a day and age where children can be born by three parents. Is that something possible that Book of Gilgamesh is hinting at here? That he was special. Something about him was where he had a mother and father and maybe DNA of one of the gods, one of the Watchers. Who knows? There's a great ties and source that deals with Gilgamesh. It even has people believe that he has ties to Nimrod. I did a video called Nimrod and the connection to the Nephilim, and or the Nephilim and the connection to the ancient cultures. But right here, Gilgamesh, and I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry, let me get back. Gilgamesh here is talking about he's gone. He's going the distance. He's trying to reach to the gods. And it says that when he gets there, he gets to the gate of the mountain, and he's going to be stopped by these two scorpion-like beings. And when Gilgamesh has been talking with them, trying to get past them, and I want you to hear how Gilgamesh describes where he's going. It says, and Gilgamesh heard this. He did as the man scorpion has said. He followed the sun's road to his rising through the mountain. And we had gone, and one league of the darkness became thick around him, for there was no light. He could not see nothing ahead and nothing behind. After 2 leagues, the darkness was thick, and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind. After 3 leagues, the darkness was thick, and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind. And after 4 leagues, the darkness was thick and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind. And at the end of 5 leagues, the darkness was thick and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind. And the 6 leagues, the darkness was thick and there was no light. And he could not see nothing ahead and nothing behind. Then he had gone 7 leagues. And the darkness was thick, and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind. He ends up going 8 leagues, and Gilgamesh gave a great cry. For the darkness was thick, and he could not see nothing ahead and behind him. And the 9th leagues, he felt the north wind on his face. But the darkness was thick, and there was no light. He could see nothing ahead and nothing behind him. After 10 leagues, the end was near. After 11 leagues, the dawn light appeared. At the end of 12 leagues, the sun streamed out. Then it goes on and says, and there was the garden of the gods. All around him stood bushes bearing gems. Seeing it, he went down to face. But there was a fruit of carnal with the vine hanging from it, beautiful to look at. So he's going into this part. He's going to the edge of the earth. He's going to that barren land, but he did not stop. I find it interesting because Admiral Byrd kind of refers to the same thing when he is talking about Antarctica. He says that it's a barren land, but if you push further into that barren land, there is going to be this vast continent that we can go and get the resources of. When you look at the Book of Gilgamesh, when he finally gets past that barren land and is able to get to the garden, he sees gems, he sees rubies, he sees great fruit, he sees all the sweet things to see. And in doing so, he sees rare stones, pearls, things from the sea. Gilgamesh walks the garden to the edge of the sea of Shemas, saw him, and he saw he was dressed in the skins of animals and ate their flesh. So this person, this deity, sees him and recognizes that this is a man, that he's reached the garden where he should never reach. And Admiral Byrd kind of refers to the same thing, talks about, you know, there's great resources there, things that will make countries rich, be able to provide for everyone. There's this vast land, this vast continent of great splendor. And it begs the question, did Admiral Byrd see possibly the same thing that Gilgamesh is explaining here? Kind of the same thing in the book of Enoch that he is describing. That there is something past the great barren land, and that this firmament, they're able to push past it and go through the great void. I mean, Enoch talks about it being, you know, where the angels are bound and waiting for the time of judgment, and that it is dark and it's a void. There's no life. And then it talks about here that going past that part, you're seeing a garden. Enoch talks about a garden. Just throwing this out there, I'm not saying that this is the Garden of Eden. I'm just throwing it out there to think about how this Garden of the Gods is described in the book of Gilgamesh. Could this be, because it talks about he's wearing animal skins. That, and I know that Gilgamesh is Mesopotamian ancient text. But if you look at what the Creator ended up having to do for Adam and Eve when they sinned, they had just fig leaves that they could cover themselves. And it says the Creator, Yahweh, covered them with skins. And this is a place that they recognize that Gilgamesh is from the land where they're covered with skins in which the animals and they ate. So guys, is there something more to Antarctica? I believe so. I believe you can look at several different ancient texts and see this pattern that people talk about, the edge of the earth, the four corners, the pillars of the earth. You take a look at this barren wasteland that nothing lives on. You see that nothing can survive there. You see other ancient texts talks about land mass and land places where when you get past a certain point of the barren land, you're seeing a garden. So I do think that there is something to the Antarctic. I think that there's possibly where Gilgamesh went, where it taught in Enoch in the 18th and 19th chapter, talks about this barren land being at the edge, could have ties to the fact that the Nazis did find and communicate with this ancient culture. Possibly the remnant of the Nephilim, what was left of the Watcher's children, maybe the second or third generation. There's a lot of theories out there, and all of them are very interesting. All of them are very different. I wanted to do this video so that you would be able to see that even in today's society, Antarctica is a mystery in which no one has solved, a puzzle that seems to can't be answered. Could there be evidence? Could there be knowledge that's there that if we were allowed to go there, when you do research, you realize, yeah, you can go to certain parts of Antarctica, but you cannot go there without the written permission from the UN. You can't go there on your own. You can't get in a boat or a plane and fly to Antarctica to explore it for yourselves. But yet, you can have explorers explore every place in the whole world. All other six continents. Seven they call Antarctica the seventh continent. But yet, you can go all around the world with a passport, a visa. Go climb Mount Everest. Go look at the ancient pyramids. Go to Peru. You could go to those places and search. The one place that explorers are not allowed to go to and explore on their own is Antarctica. Why is that? Why is it that there's a treaty with 40 plus nations, one of the longest treaties in the world, that has lasted, when we fight for oil in all these other countries, and we're fighting for water and reserves, yet Admiral Byrd said there was a great, great vast of wealth to be attained Antarctica that you don't see any country going there to take it over. Why is it that before the elections did John Kerry all of a sudden make a special trip to Antarctica? Why is it that there was a meeting with the